This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It is Meera Sivasuthi. Dr. Nick Rubia, Nick Abdul Rashid, she's the Senior Principal Assistant Director, Adolescent Health Unit, Family Health Development Division of Ministry of Health Malaysia. Of course, we're discussing the rise of teen pregnancies in Malaysia, a topic which, you know, we have been constantly visiting and revisiting. But what's the status at the moment? There are varying statistics. How serious of a problem is it really? We'll find out from Dr. Nick and Rubia. How are you today? Thank you for coming in. It's the eve of Chinese New Year.
Yeah, too.
I don't know whether it's the best topic to talk about on the eve of Chinese New Year, but anyway, you know, could you just go through some statistics with us, Dr. Nick Rubia, because how serious is this teen pregnancy issue in Malaysia?
If you go back to the cases of teenage pregnancy, we started collecting the data on teenage pregnancy in July 2010. Mm-hmm. And we have about 5,962 cases then from July to December in 2010. So if you look at that, it's on average about 1,000 cases a month. Mm-hmm. Teenage pregnant girls will come to our antenatal services. But then subsequently in 2011 and 2012, the number has rises from 18,652 in 2011 to 18,847 2012. Mm-hmm. So this is actually the cases, the teenagers that access our primary healthcare facilities throughout the country. And of these, we found out that a quarter of them are unmarried. So this is a good indication that that shows that our primary healthcare facilities is accessible. They are coming, and even the unmarried is also coming.
Right. What do you provide? What sort of service do you provide at the primary healthcare service?
We have at the primary healthcare, there's these outpatient services where we provide adolescent screening. We have this adolescent screening. So that because mostly adolescents, they don't tell their problems. So with these screening tools, it is easier. It's self-administered, and they are assured of their confidentiality. So we can identify their problems early and treat early. Then we also provide health education and from health education as well as curative services, and also advice and counselings for those special cases that need further management. We might have to refer to the hospitals or to the other agencies.
How does the ministry define an adolescent? What is the age?
Okay, the adolescent, we follow the WHO definition of adolescent, which is those who are 10 to 19 years old.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so are you saying that we have 10-year-olds who get pregnant?
Yes, it has been reported. I was involved with the WHO research on a literature review of the on sexual reproductive health in Malaysia. There was reported as early as 9 years old.
Here in Malaysia?
Yes.
Wow. Are you not afraid?
Of course.
And especially if you have children, you have, you know, girls, you sort of think, you know, 9 years old, getting pregnant.
Yes.
How do you help them cope with that? I mean, antenatal care is one thing, but post-delivery, do you provide some kind of support for them?
Yes, Ministry of Health, through its primary healthcare facilities throughout the country, our health clinics, the community clinics, and we provide antenatal care services. And this include, you know, the regular, they come and have their BP check for hemoglobin and so on, their height, weight measured, and also they provide advice and counselling, check the mother as well as how their pregnancy is like. And also for the teenagers, they are advised to deliver in the hospitals.
Okay.
And then the nurses will follow up postnatal, for postnatal care.
There's always this social stigma towards unwed mothers. Mm-hmm. Anywhere in the world, what more in Asia? You know, it seems to be a little worse on this side of the world. How do you help them deal with that? Do you bring in parents as well in terms of support for these girls?
That would be the ideal, if you can have parents also involved. That would be the ideal situation.
But however, it isn't.
But however, in some situations...
or in most.
in some situations, the parents are not in the know of the children's activities. And when they come to the clinic, some of them would request that, the problems not be shared with the parents. So that's we have to issues there, you know, in terms of balancing. You know, they are minors where they need to be. They also have rights for information and services, and also parents also have rights of parental consent. What I mean is that kan, to know what we are providing services for. So there's a tricky balance there.
Yep. How do you manage that at the ministry? How do you balance that?
So we have developed some guidelines and also modules. We do trainings how to teach our primary care providers to engage with the adolescents. There's such thing. I went on a WFU fellowship to Australia, and we found that this very interesting way using this HEADSS HEADS framework, how we can engage with the adolescent in a nice, non-threatening way, you know. And when you see the adolescent, you're supposed to introduce yourself and inform the adolescent that everything discussed is confidential, except in three situations. That is, if they are harming themselves, let's say they want to commit suicide, or they are harming others, they say they want to kill somebody else, or others are harming them. Let's say, like, if they are being abused, you know, things like that. So in these situations, then we need to inform the relevant authorities or things like that. So if we have this clear agreement, this what they call verbal confidentiality contract with the teenager, then when we find this difficult, threatening situation, then we will have to inform them that they need, we might need to have their parents in because they need further support, you know.
We are known not to have the best trained personnel to deal with issues like this. We lack those in numbers in a big, big way. Yeah. So how are you managing this? How do you train your staff to approach these adolescents in the best way possible? Because to a very large extent, we're all Asians ourselves. Yeah. We have our own set of biasness. So how then do you train your staff and help make them understand how to deal best with these adolescents?
We have, as I mentioned earlier, for our healthcare providers, we have our training programs in place. We provide trainings at the national level, and then there's echo training at the states as well as the district levels. You know, so and there are health what do you call that? Modules, guidelines, and we have developed videos. Various teaching aids to assist in the delivery of quality services to the adolescents, which are non-judgmental, confidential, you know, and look into the best interest of the child.
Dr. Nick, do you find that a lot more adolescents have come forward over the years to seek treatment from these primary care providers?
Yes, from our feedbacks from our doctors in the primary healthcare, they are seeing more and more cases. Because you know why? Because when we start screening, using the screening assessment tool, then you will get more of these sensitive issues
people open up.
Being open up. And also, so as you can see, the statistics are showing, isn't it? From 18,600 in 2011, we have 18,800 over in 2012. Mm-hmm. The number of teenagers who are accessing the antenatal healthcare services in our country.
Okay, but those also are, does not, it is not a reflection of how many teen pregnancies we have in the country, because we don't know of those who don't come to these clinics, do we? Mm-hmm. So what is your rough average of unaccounted statistics?
I think majority of them do come to the clinics, only a small percentage, because if you look at the live birth from the statistics department, you know, if on average a year is about, say, 19,000. So if they are coming about 18,000 plus, you know, so it's only a small number that does not come
forward to
seek help.
One of the things which I found was quite disturbing is that a teenager is actually twice more likely to die from pregnancy or childbirth complications than women in their 20s.
Yes.
Could you shed more light on that? Why is that?
Yeah, because teenagers, as we know, especially the younger they are, if they are below 15, then they are at higher risk of complications as well as death during delivery. This is because, as we all know, they are still immature. The pelvic is still not fully developed, so they might end up with obstructed labor, and postpartum hemorrhage and things like that, which is more for the younger adolescents.
Mm-hmm. Below the age of
15. Below 15 years old.
Okay. At the same time, we do have teen pregnancies, which are allowed in this country. Are you for it? On the one hand, we're talking about this as an issue, as a health problem. But on the other, we are not saying no to teen pregnancies either.
Actually, it depends, on the social supports the teen have, So, in general, I would not encourage, personally, I do not encourage early marriage, because I think there are other things that they need to focus on in terms of the education, preparing themselves, because early motherhood comes with a lot of responsibility. And we know that those teenagers who get married early and do not have adequate social support, they tend to drop out from school because they have to cope, because of the stigma, as well as they have to cope with a newborn baby. So,
rather not.
Yeah, rather not.
Is your personal opinion.
That's my personal opinion.
We'll come back and find out more about the rise of teen pregnancies in Malaysia. If you have a question for Dr. Nick Rubia, she's from the Ministry of Health Malaysia, send it through 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi. Dr. Nick Rubia, Nick Abdul Rashid, Senior Principal Assistant Director, Adolescent Health Unit, Family Health Development Division, Ministry of Health Malaysia. That's a mouthful, Dr. Rubia. It's a very long title for a department. And we're discussing the rise of teen pregnancies in Malaysia. Dr. Nick Rubia, you actually, in one of the leading newspapers, actually said that one of the contributing reasons for the rise in teen pregnancies in Malaysia is the lack of parental guidance. Do you really think it's got all to do with the parents?
Actually, there is no one single cause of the rise in teenage pregnancy. The causes are multifactorial, and the lack of parental guidance is one of the causes of this. Yeah? Because there are various studies. I'm quoting one from this WHO on risk and protective factors. These are studies from 53 countries. In 53 countries across the various parts of regions of the world, it found that, family matters. Yeah? Adolescents who have positive relationship with their parents are less likely to initiate sexual intercourse. All right? And those adolescents, especially if the parents, it's a protective factor. If the parents provide structure, guidance, and boundaries, they are less likely to initiate sexual intercourse.
What about in Malaysia? Have we done much studies?
In Malaysia, I think we have studies, but it is scattered all over in the universities. So actually, this is one of the issues where Ministry of Health is working with the University of Malaya. University of Malaya is establishing a clearinghouse for adolescent health researchers. Mm-hmm. So that will assist. We can get lots of this research being compiled and easy to access.
In my mind, the easiest thing the easiest thing that comes to mind at the moment is, as you said, parental guidance. We are in the best position to empower our children with this knowledge. And two, it goes back to schools. We have been very hesitant when it comes to reproductive health education in schools for fear that we may come across as encouraging teenagers to, indulge in sexual intercourse as a reason. And funnily, we just had a news report just now from France where, one of the some of the parents are pulling the children out because of rumors about sex education, that they may actually be passing on mixed messages about gender theories. Now, reproductive health education is always a very, you have to tread very carefully when you implement it in schools. How far have we come? We have a few schools I know who have decided to implement reproductive health education, but is it a countrywide system that we have in place?
Our country, we have a curriculum social and reproductive health curriculum, which is very good. But I think we need to enhance the delivery, how the knowledge is being imparted to our young people, because research has been done. There, I've been reading the reports from research by Center of Disease Control and Prevention in USA, where they studied in various schools the sexuality education curriculum. They found out that out of hundreds, only a handful are really effective, you know, and those effective ones are the ones that number one, the delivery. It is not a one-way lecture, but it is very participatory, interactive. There has a lot of role play. They teach us negotiating skills, you know, when you're faced with these high-risk situations. Also provide informations safe sex, you know.
Contraceptives.
For those, and it also stressed in most of these effective ones, for those who are not sexually active, they stress on the importance of abstinence as the best method of family planning or contraception. Mm-hmm. You can protect you from unwanted pregnancy as well as from sexually transmitted infection or HIV. But for those who are sexually active, they need to also be educated on the use of condoms or other methods of contraception.
Right. So how are we doing tackling this problem in Malaysia?
In Malaysia, the curriculum is very good. I think the Ministry of Education is having a good curriculum, but maybe they have to look into the delivery by the teachers and so on.
Do they work closely with you, the Ministry of Education?
Yes, we are working closely to address these issues, intersectoral.
Do we know how many schools have implemented this?
It is for the Ministry of Education to elaborate more on this, but they do have this pendidikan kesihatan, they call it, health education in place, where the students are being taught primary as well as secondary school across curriculum.
Okay. Any other health hazards being a teenager? Getting pregnant as a teenager or as an adolescent, as you said, between the ages of 10 to 19, yeah. Besides, of course, the fact that you are twice more likely to die from pregnancy or childbirth complications, mm-hmm. Are there any other health aspects to be looked into when you are a teenage mom?
Yeah, of course, because the physical aspects we mentioned just now, as well as the emotional aspects. You know, it's the physical, emotional aspects of the teenagers. Especially if they are involved in, they are out of wedlock, you know, mm-hmm. It can create a lot of, anxiety and depression. We have in 2012, one case of a suicide, 16-year-old girl who committed suicide, and she did not access our healthcare services because she was scared, mm-hmm. or shy or fear or whatever fear, and she only came after she ingested the paraquat, you know. So that's very sad. So I would like to take this opportunity to highlight to the public outside there, please, if you have any problems, especially to teenagers or the parents, please come to our healthcare facilities, the primary healthcare facilities nationwide. We are there to provide help and services for your children as well as your family.
Post-pregnancy, I think the Minister of Women is very much against the idea of schools for pregnant teens. Are you for it? Because, you know, it's difficult for them to go to normal schools because there is a chance you could be stigmatized even more as being the pregnant person in class. So then comes the idea of putting them in separate schools. Is that the way forward?
Actually, when we want to solve problems, we have to look at it at various aspects. You see, for those who are academically inclined, the school would be an option, you know, for them to continue the schoolings, encourage them to continue the schoolings. But for those who are not academically inclined, maybe we have to consider other options for vocational trainings and so on, so that they can have some means of a livelihood, and so that to take care of themselves as well as their future families. Because we know that if we don't provide them with proper education, then they might land up in this... They do not have adequate education, and education is related to employment, the quality of employment, and then you will be in the vicious cycle of poverty, ill health, and being abused in future. So it is good that we have, what do you call that, various options to cater the needs of different categories of adolescents.
But don't you think, academically inclined or not, everyone should go through at least till SPM? Because if you get pregnant at 12, for an example, I mean, that would mean missing out on your entire secondary education, which is not the best thing either. So how do you have a baby and still continue in school, or still continue with school while you're pregnant?
That would be ideal.
Do schools allow you to come in when you're pregnant?
Actually, the school allows you to come back after you get pregnant. But the issue is, it's the self-stigma by the teenagers, you know, that makes them drop out. So we have to consider this. Number one, we have to advocate more to the public, the teenagers and the teachers and so on, to encourage the adolescent to continue schooling, not to drop out. And for those who do drop out, or you know, we can consider alternative mechanisms or facilities for schooling, maybe homeschooling. Mm-hmm. That might be an option.
Yeah.
Things like that.
And all of this can be explored at the primary healthcare facility.
Yeah, this can be explored.
For those who really don't want to come to the primary healthcare facility, Dr. Rubia, you know, then they feel a little lost. Confidentiality, of course, as you can assure them as much, but they still have that fear.
Yeah.
Then you have these cases of baby dumping, and you have baby hatches now, which are coming into place. If they are still worried about coming forward to your primary healthcare facility, what should they do?
They should seek help from reliable sources. You know, I think there is available this child line. You see the child line 15999, mm-hmm. so they can call in and they will be directed to people who can facilitate to address the issues. And there's also the other agencies, the social welfare department and the various NGOs. But the thing is, the media must also play a role, so that this information of where they can seek these helps and services, yeah, is made known to the adolescents and to the general public.
So if they'd like to get in touch with you or anyone, we know the child line is 15999. Are there any other numbers that we can call? At the ministry, or
at the Ministry of Health, you can go through our website portal www.moh.gov.my. So inside there, you can see the whole list of the healthcare facilities throughout the country. That's one. And also you can get further information on topics related to sexual reproductive health for the teenagers through our online portal, My Health, www.myhealth.gov.my.
Your final message on the rise of teen pregnancies in Malaysia. What would you like to leave us with?
Yeah, I hope that we all work together to address this issue holistically, because studies have shown that effective interventions need to be holistic to tackle, not only to try to reduce the risk factors, but also to enhance the protective factors within the individuals themselves, within the families, within the peers, the schools, the communities, and so forth, as well as policies to support the positive development of the children at large.
Thank
so
you.
That they can achieve their optimum potential and be contributing assets to the society.
Thank you very much for joining me today. Dr. Nick Rubia, Nick Abdul Rashid, Senior Principal Assistant Director, Adolescent Health Unit, Family Health Development Division, Ministry of Health, Malaysia, on the rise of teen pregnancies in Malaysia. On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.